Hello, hello. This is Zulema Gomez here for The Bold and the Brave. Hi, Hobson. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Zulema. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, my goodness. I have been so excited for you to join us on a more regular basis on the podcast and co-host and host moving forward. But since you are coming back, and I think you were here maybe one or two podcasts ago, I wonder if there's anything you'd like to share about yourself and why you're in this civic space.
I am the Operations and Special Initiatives Associate with the National Parent Leadership Institute and the head of the Legislative Advocacy and Policy Team. We do a lot of legislative advocacy work. I'm also in law school and I've been involved in political campaigns throughout different parts of my career. Civic engagement, advocacy, all of those things are right up my alley. I'm very excited for the conversations we're going to have today, but also that we're going to be having going forward.
Yes, I have the wonderful privilege of working with Hobson and is a fellow policy nerd like many of us at MPLI. So welcome. And for those who don't know me, I am Zulema Gomez and I am the Director of Implementation and Capacity Building at MPLI. We really wanted to take the time today to talk a little bit about what's happening in policy and politics. As parent leaders, as civic leaders, it's always important to pay attention what's happening in federal government, maybe some things that are happening at the local level. And then there's some important work that we are doing at MPLI that we'd love to highlight. And then, of course, we have some important honorable mention kind of dates and holidays coming up that we honor in different ways as civic leaders. But I know, Hobson, you're in Atlanta. You all got a bunch of snow. How are you faring with this weather? How are you doing?
We're actually doing fairly well. We were very concerned. We got like 5 inches of snow, which is the most snow I've ever seen in Atlanta. But I actually saw a snow plow truck in Atlanta and it really helped because the roads are drivable. So it's great. But yeah, we're hanging in there.
Yeah, these are the days to appreciate like the folks who are keeping our cities going, right? The infrastructure going.
For sure. 100%, 100%. You don't realize how much goes into getting one plow truck into the city, especially when you're not a place that often has snow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on the opposite end of the spectrum in California, we're sort of like in a different place. Many folks have heard about the fires, several fires that are happening in LA. We have some strong winds again today and are expecting the containment to be a little bit more difficult. But we've heard a lot from folks checking in. A lot of people know I'm in California, Southern California. And we are not in LA County, we're in San Diego County, but definitely our neighbors, our community is rallying a lot to help those who have been affected by fires. And if you are someone who is interested in helping, there are many organizations to give to directly that are helping with folks who have been completely displaced, have lost their homes. And we're happy to share more information on that. But just feeling a lot of gratitude and appreciation for check-ins, but also for our neighbors in other states and in other countries, right? We've seen Canadian and Mexican firefighters that have come in large numbers to help out and just feeling so much gratitude for the community that's here to help in LA.
Yeah.
So Hobson, you know, these are some of the things that are happening locally in our communities, but I wonder as a civic leader, if there are any things that you're paying attention to either at the federal level that you think we should highlight in this conversation, what's coming up as far as this new administration coming in?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely going to be about the confirmation of these cabinet appointments and seeing who's going to be running a lot of our executive agencies in 2025 and going forward. And then also just looking at the balance of Congress right now and the Supreme Court and what a 2026 midterm election looks like. So I'm thinking a little bit ahead, but also thinking kind of in the here and now and figuring out a pathway to move forward. How about you?
Yeah, I think the appointments are on my mind, the cabinet appointments. This week, there are hearings happening. So I think there are a few key names that we're going to hear that are potentially going to oversee large departments in our country that definitely will have a trickle-down impact into our local communities. I know that there are a couple that I'm thinking about quite a bit and paying attention to. I wonder if there's a couple for you. I'm looking specifically at, for example, Scott Turner, who would be looking at leading HUD or Housing and Urban Development, and Robert F. Kennedy, who is sort of got tagged in for overseeing Health and Human Services. I wonder if there's anyone else on your mind that we can sort of start to sort through and check in on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about Linda McMahon, who's set to be the education secretary, and Lori Chavez de Romero, who is set to be the labor secretary. Both of them have some interesting policy perspectives and have been the topic of discussion in terms of whether or not they're going to be getting confirmed for the cabinet. But I do want to, I feel like this is something that I never took a moment to actually like look up. What is the cabinet? You know, what does the cabinet do? What is their role? So I actually went to whitehouse.gov and it kind of lays out the different roles of the executive branch. And for cabinet, it just says the cabinet is an advisory body made up of the heads of 15 executive departments. They're appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and the members of the cabinet are often the president's closest confidants. They run major federal agencies and play an important role in the presidential line of succession. So that gives you kind of viewers, that gives you a little bit of an idea about when the role that some of these folks are going to be playing, but also the importance that they have, especially in that succession line. These folks are folks that might be leaders of the country. So they're just very interesting and important to recognize and be aware of those cabinet leaders, I think.
And there's a process, right? So just because the president has appointed or the president-elect has appointed or selected members of the cabinet, it doesn't mean that they will be in that place, right? So there is a whole hearing, confirmation process, background checks, things like that, that have already eliminated some early appointees in the last month or so. But then, you know, we have other folks moving forward to the hearing process. So I think that's important to say that, yes, they've been appointed, selected, but not yet confirmed. There's a process to that still.
Yep. And I think this kind of goes to my other concern around the balance of Congress right now. This general concern that we've had from the founding of our country between efficiency and tyranny. Right now, the Republicans have control over both houses of Congress, the presidency, and the Supreme Court. What that does on the positive side is that it gives the Republican Party opportunities to pass legislation with little to no resistance, right? Because in order to get a bill passed, you have to get 50% in one chamber, get it over to the other chamber, get it passed in that chamber, then get it to the president's desk. Republicans have both of those chambers, also have the presidency. And then in the event that somebody thought that that bill was unconstitutional, the Republicans also have control of the Supreme Court. And so right now there's not much avenue for contesting Republican legislation outside of pulling some Republican votes if you can. So it's just an interesting place to be in, especially when you're looking at the other side of the coin of tyranny, of not having that checks and balances available, having another party that has a say. It just means that 2026 midterm election is going to be of even more importance.
Right. If we don't have, if our values don't align with the things that the Republican Party is doing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be important, even if you want to maintain and keep this majority, right? It's just going to be a pivotal election for both sides to either keep that power or try to take some of it away.
Yeah, and I think because of that, there are a lot of political analysts that are predicting that there will be a lot of policy, new laws that will be passed in the next 2 years because of that potential flip. So I think paying attention to what's coming down the line, as always, will be important. It was interesting you talked about the sort of control of the Supreme Court. I think it's important to say that no party or president can dictate what the Supreme Court does. However, if we, again, are paying attention to pattern and value alignment, we see very conservative members of the Supreme Court and a lot of stripping away of a variety of human rights and civil rights that have happened just in the last few years. So I think it is fair to say that a lot of things are aligned right now for the Republicans' more conservative policies.
Yeah, and to your point, historically, the Supreme Court has had political leanings, but they have also been susceptible to societal pressures as well. So, you know, this isn't a conversation to say that all hope is lost, right? There's still advocacy that can be done. And again, all hope is lost if you're not aligned, but it could be the greatest thing ever for you. So, you know, there's still opportunities for advocacy and having your voice heard, you know, so keep pushing if that's where you are.
Yeah, I think where there's hope is that there's a lot that could be done on the local and state level to really protect communities from some of the larger federal decisions, either from the Supreme Court or from legislators at the federal level. So sometimes there are laws that are passed at the federal level, but counties, cities, and states will create their own laws to sort of like buffer the impact. And we saw this around the overturning of Roe v. Wade and how there were states that immediately put it to citizen vote to protect reproductive rights for people right within those states. So I think if you're seeing that as we're paying attention, it might be time to organize or join coalitions and organizations that are doing that work of trying to really create protections after these laws are passed. So I think I'm with you. I'm always in a place of hope. Maybe not initially, like let's be honest and human. I've definitely shed tears for decisions that have been made, but then very quickly have found community and places where I can put my energies. And I think the case here, and even as we were looking at some of the cabinet appointments, there's one where I find a little bit more hope based on some of their actions. And we have to remember that just because someone is Republican or Democrat, they're not always making the best decisions for our community, despite the party, right? And you mentioned Lori Chavez de Remer, who would be overseeing labor, right? So she could become the labor secretary and is someone who has historically been pro-union, pro-labor, pro-workforce in some of the policies and laws that she's tried to have passed. So I think there's some positive there and some history there. What we don't know is how she'll align to what the administration overall policies have been, which have been very anti-workforce, very anti-regulation when it comes to building and businesses. And so there's a little bit of what feels like a contradiction in values. So it'll be really interesting to see what this potential Secretary Lori Chavez does in light of the administration that's pulling her in.
Yeah, and I think similarly on that, I think there was a lot of discussion around the Trump administration wanting to get rid of the Department of Education. As we know, they've won the presidency, but they've also appointed Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who, you know, was a longtime owner of the WWE and a longtime advocate and someone who is highly involved in the education space. So she's someone who's very much an advocate for school choice, but she's somebody who definitely has been involved in education and implementing systems of education throughout the country.
Yeah, I think she has definitely been very school choice, pro-charter schools. So if you're a parent leader that's aligned with some of those values, I think this is someone that might be an advocate. I do think it's important to talk about what school choice means, and really specifically through that conservative lens. It hasn't always meant just freedom to take your kids to whatever school they want, right? In some cases, school choice has also led to stripping away the choice for materials and curriculum, similar to a lot of the work that Moms for Liberty do. It doesn't mean that it's liberty for all. It really just means actually stripping away liberties to read whatever young people want to read. And so I think this is just another reminder that we need to pay attention. We might hear words like, oh, they're all for school choice. Great, we're good. I can tap out. And that's not what this means, right? If anything, we have to always dig in and see what we're learning about folks. I think Robert F. Kennedy is another one of these appointees that, you know, we hear a lot of conflicting things, but it's important to do research. Robert F. Kennedy potentially become the Secretary of Health and Human Services, talks a lot about health, but it's important to look at his history and how he impacts. There was another letter that went out today in the New York Times where health officials from all across the country, thousands, are calling for him not to be confirmed in this position. There's great concerns. But then there was recently a letter of support from 800 health officials. So again, it's important to look at, like, why do these health officials support someone like Robert F. Kennedy for this place? And why do these thousands not? Like, what is it in his body of work, his advocacy? And there might be some alignment and values for us as parent leaders in some of the things he says. But let's look at process and how science has come into some of that work as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that one of the appointees that I'd like to highlight that you kind of spoke to earlier was Scott Turner, who's set to be the secretary for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He's actually the Trump administration's highest ranking Black person that has been selected up until this point. And he's a former NFL player. I didn't find much about his work in housing and urban development specifically, but, you know, I'm sure that he'll have some policies that align with the Trump administration. So it'll be interesting to see what policies come out of that branch or that agency as well over the next few years, especially given the lack of documented experience that's out there. So it's something to consider. And also just to reemphasize this process point, the Senate are the ones who confirm these appointees. Opportunity for advocacy as the MPLI advocacy guy, right? Call your senators. Tell them to encourage other senators to vote yes or no for the appointees that you believe are good or bad for the country. There's always an opportunity to have your voice heard, and especially with an administration that has consolidated so much power, it can be even more important to have your voice heard in situations like this, even if it's to go from one Trump appointee to a different Trump appointee, or to make sure that RF Kennedy gets the health and human services secretary position. Whatever your position is, your voice is definitely needed in this process.
Hobson, I think that's so important. And so, for example, let's take Scott Turner. So potentially this is someone who will oversee Section 8, affordable housing development, housing vouchers, and really look at all policies tied to housing, right? So if I am someone who's really passionate about affordable housing or making sure that the Section 8 budget expands, I would call my senator. Your senator won't pick up, right? They're not going to pick up the phone, but you might hear from an aide. And all you have to do is say, my name is Fidelma Gomez. I live in this district and I want Senator so-and-so to oppose the confirmation or approve, and for these reasons, right? And so these calls add up and they keep those tallies. Does it always sway a senator or a legislator? Not always, but we've heard from a lot of legislators who will ask, how many oppose, how many approve? How many calls have I received around this? And it can help inform their decision. So I think it's a really good reminder of like, how we can take action on things that feel so large and out of our reach, but that they impact us directly. All of us depend on housing, and definitely affordable housing would be nice. So if this is something you're passionate about, these are the calls that you can make, or emails, very quick emails, right? It doesn't have to be your life story or all the data and research, although if you have some of that, link it. But sometimes they're just looking for the yeses and nays when it comes to those calls, and it can help sway sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, advocacy is an ongoing process. So even if it doesn't help sway the first time, establishing a relationship with your senator's office can never be a bad thing. So I definitely encourage you all to get involved if you can. Is there anything else around the new administration? I know we have the inauguration coming up. I think the results of the election were just certified last week with no, you know, we have to say this now, there was no sorts of crazy happenings with the certification, just clean, clear.
No drama, no violence, no insurrections.
True.
Vice President Kamala Harris did what she was appointed to do, right? Which is to certify this. And I think was a great example of what this process should look like. And hopefully this continues forever after, right? This seamless process. The inauguration is next Monday. So it's January 20th. I think I had mentioned to you, this is, for me, always feels like a teaching moment as a parent. I have kept my son from attending school to witness the full inauguration. You know, 1 year, we received an email from a teacher that said they were going to show the inauguration. And so I think that was great. It was great to have a teacher in partnership. But for me, it's important, especially with this last cycle, now that my son is older in 2020, I wanted him to witness the first female vice president, see that live, and the speeches, the swearing in, and all the celebrity guests. What was beautiful about that was all the wonderful diversity reflected at that event. This year, we just had this conversation this weekend around watching what we might see, who might be on, how it might be different or similar. Though I might not keep him from school this year, I think it'll be important to have a conversation when I pick him up from school. He'll be able to see it. It's a day off. It's a holiday, Martin Luther King Day. So that'll be great. So I don't have to keep him from school. But yeah, so we want to witness that live. Sorry, Hobson, go ahead.
No, it's going to be interesting for me. I always compare the different tones of the speeches of the incumbent or the president, sitting president, and then the incumbent president, and kind of how that transition happens. And then also comparing, like, you know, like Joe Biden's inauguration in 2020, even to Donald Trump's last inauguration in 2016. Like, what are going to be the differences between how Donald sounded in 2016 to how he's sounding now in 2024, right? You know, how is he going to express his plans for the country? There's been a lot of concerns around some of the ways he's expressed that. And then there's been a lot of excitement around some of the plans that he's had, right? So I think, as always with Donald Trump, his words and the energy that he brings is going to be the news of that day. And so I'm interested to see. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily excited, but I am interested to see what that's like and what those differences are.
Yeah, and where possible, I think the reason why we encourage to watch live is that you're getting the full context, right? Sometimes you can listen to the news cycle or watch the news later that day, but you're going to hear clips without context. You're going to hear a reporter say something, their own opinion often, and then a clip of something. And so where possible, watching live or reading the full transcripts allows us to make decisions around sort of like mood, energy, what we're hearing about policy. I think that's why it's so important to encourage, if you can, listen or watch live rather than just leaning on like what the media is going to feed us, right? Unless it's a trusted source. And even then, you know, I always recommend allsides.com as the place that will give you the news, sort of like the center view when it comes to news. And I'm sure there's other resources around fact checking, but you don't have to fact check as much if you're watching live. And if you hear something that is like, it's kind of questionable, then you can go to factcheck.org or, you know, do your own research at the moment. And there's a lot of fact checking that has to be done with this incoming president. We know that there's historical numbers around how much fact checking happens anytime he speaks. And I think that's the work that we do as parent leaders as well. We have to do our research just because they're throwing out numbers and dates and names. It'll be important to develop those researching skills in these coming years. Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think folks often underestimate the power of a quick Google search. Like you said, I think that there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come up with the Google search, right? But I think if you get one source on either side of an issue and then one that's in the middle, that way you can formulate your own opinion, right? I wouldn't go into the research thinking I'm going to read something and then that's going to be my opinion for the rest of forever, but go into it with an open mind. You know, I want to look at this side, I want to look at this side, and then I want to develop my image of the world based on the information I've gotten. So I love that you brought that up. I think it's going to be vitally important over the next 4 years and even, you know, even past that, irregardless of this administration.
That's right.
I think it's just like with the age of social media, with the how easily information is manipulated nowadays, it just takes fact checking and checking your sources in order to be a educated and informed decision maker in this country.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even just looking up some of these cabinet appointees, it started with Google, right? So you enter the name, and the three main sources that I relied on as I was looking down the list, I ignored Wikipedia, not to say that they're never trusted, but we know that those things can be edited by regular people for very many different reasons, but looked at the Associated Press, looked at CNN, and looked at BBC. And all of them had similar things, but all of them had something different, right? BBC has a different perspective on American politics, which I always enjoy. And Associated Press is usually very factual, just what's been said, and, you know, a lot of really good sources there. But I appreciate the Google start, right? Like, where do I start? Just start with Google and look at what's sponsored content at the top and then keep going after that. But I think these are skills that we want to model to our children or to other young people, because as you said, in this age of social media, this isn't actually getting better for us, right? To find trusted sources. If anything, it's getting worse. We just saw Mark Zuckerberg, who owns Meta, right? Facebook and Instagram, just talked about removing censorships, which are about to make a lot of those spaces even less trustworthy sources. And we've already seen that with people posting that Mark Zuckerberg has done this or that, all of which are lies, but really in an attempt to poke fun at this incoming like new policy around removing censorship. So those are definitely places not to rely on for sources.
Yeah. And just to maybe put a tie up the bias conversation and verifying sources, I think one, you mentioned allsides.com earlier. One resource that they have that I utilize a lot is the media bias chart. So it's just a chart that it has all of these different media outlets and their different political biases on a scale, right? From way left-leaning to central to way right-leaning. This helps me when I'm doing this research and I find a piece of information that maybe I'm like, oh, this sounds great. Or I'm like, oh, well, this sounds crazy. You know, I'll go onto this site and be like, this was one of those super left-leaning sites. So, you know, let me just take this with a grain of salt. They might be doing, you know, trying to manipulate how I'm looking at the situation, right? And so just being aware of that, I think, is very, very important as well.
Hobson, can you tell me, if you're looking at the tool in real time, the three sources that I listed, where do they fall on that bias chart? I'm really curious. So I listed Associated Press, BBC, and CNN.
So CNN is center left. I'm looking at, you said BBC, right? BBC is actually center, and Associated Press is also center left.
That's interesting. Okay. So I'm central left, but you know, I could probably do some more work to go more central. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Very interesting tool. So we talked about the inauguration happening on Martin Luther King Day. If you're not watching the inauguration and doing other things, hopefully to honor Martin Luther King Day, I wonder what does this holiday usually look like for you outside of like this other thing that's overlapping, right? Are you planning on doing anything for Martin Luther King Day?
So I'll give you a two-part answer, right? When I was growing up, my grandma used to always, Martin Luther King Day was like one of those gift holidays where she would give us books from Martin Luther King or Malcolm X and we would read. That's something that I did for like the first maybe 17, 18 years of my life. Obviously, they were increasing difficulty of reading level, right? It wasn't the same little books. But nowadays, it's really just more about spending time with my family and having some of those conversations. My aunt, who my grandma's sister, she loves to have us over for like a family game night. And we like to play games like Black Card Revoked and different like Black history kind of games, which is fun in its own right. And just kind of gives us an opportunity to fellowship and eat some good food and have some fun together while talking about Black history.
That's wonderful. I love the way your family honors that. Those are all like really great ways to like honor, but also to be with family. And it feels like a true holiday. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. What about you? What do you guys
do? Yeah, it's different things. We always listen to Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech in the car. So we always listen to that speech on the way to dropping my kiddo off to school. So we make sure that we hear it or watch it like on YouTube. But there's always projects going on in the community. So it might be like a cleanup, but it's a day of service. And so I look to see who's doing something so that I can be a part of that. So I'll be doing that this week to see who's doing a specific project and joining in for a couple of hours. So making sure that, so service I think is a part of that, but also making sure that my son is fully, you know, again, every year, his understanding of what that speech means changes. And so does mine, depending on what's happening in the global context. It is a deep reminder of how much work we have to do to ensure that dream comes true for all of us. And sometimes it's a great place to see, like, I think Dr. King would be proud, right? And many of his contemporaries of some of the work that's happening. So it just depends on where I am emotionally on that day of the year where I can hear that speech.
I often reflect on, with a lot of the different turmoils that have happened over the last few years, there's been a lot of conversations about needs for new racial reckonings and all of this. But I do often sit with the reality that there are a lot of our ancestors who would be ecstatic to see the world that has been created. We're not necessarily where we want to be, but compared to where we were and what they were fighting through, a lot of progress has been made. So I think that's important to reflect on and sit with on the day as well.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think speaking of the work, there's a lot of things that we are doing at MPLI. You know, like we focus a lot on racial justice and racial equity, but there are many projects that we're working on, and I know we wanted to highlight at least one or two of those that really allow us to sort of show how parent leaders, civic leaders, continue to move the needle for children and families in our country, different parts of the country. Is there anything that you're particularly excited about that's in your sort of like project sphere at MPLI?
Yeah, so we are actually doing some work with the Central Ohio Parent Leadership Training Institute to bring advocacy training and trip to the Capitol to their community. So what that entails is we're going to have a four-part virtual training series teaching parents the ins and outs of the legislative process, on how to research and prepare for advocacy doing research, how to write a pitch, and how to deliver that pitch. And then we're actually going to take them to the Capitol and give them an opportunity to advocate to some of their legislators on, you know, a series of bills that they've expressed some interest in. This is our third official trip to the Capitol, our second one with an actual advocacy curriculum that we've built out. This curriculum has evolved over time, has taken a lot of great feedback from some of our trainees. But yeah, so I'm just very excited for that. This is set to be our biggest trip yet. I think it's going to be great. So I'm excited.
A lot of moving parts for sure. And yeah. I can always see your passion for the topic through this project. I can tell that's really where your passion is. I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm just wishing you so much luck, and hopefully I can support in any way to help make that come together in a way that you're happy with.
What about you? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
I think one thing to highlight, you know, part of the work that we do is the implementation of the Parent Leadership Training Institute in local communities, which is that civics and democracy training for parent leaders and advocates for children and families. And the work just keeps growing. I was just in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago for their retreat, Sacramento, California, and it was their fourth cohort, but their second cohort in Spanish. And it was so amazing to see the diversity in the Hispanic community that was there, the different reasons why folks joined PLTI, and community just kept coming up. I'm here because I feel isolated, or this is my third week in this country and I knew that I would learn more or find a community. And, you know, I think we were only like 20 minutes in and there were tears everywhere, but it was just so beautiful to see both the growth of PLTI in this particular community, but another reminder of what PLTI does. It's not just about advocacy training, and that is the primary focus, right? Increased civic engagement, but that community piece cannot be taken for granted. And I don't think we highlight that enough when we talk about PLTA. So I just wanted to highlight one, the growth, but a reminder that for many, if we're thinking of doing outreach and marketing for PLTI, if you're someone in a community that's interested in joining a Parent Leadership Training Institute, the community that you walk away with at the end of those 20 weeks, it's like family in the best sense of the word. So family is a trauma word for you. Know that in PLTI, family becomes a place of like true connection and support that allows you to not just move good community work forward and change forward, but it has allowed for people to make individual changes for themselves, right? To go back to school, to learn new languages. It's just been amazing. So yeah, just celebrating the great growth of PLTI.
I love that. I don't know how I can follow up such a great monologue like that.
Well, I was going to ask, because I think next month you and Melvette have like a really interesting topic planned. Do you want to just give a little quick preview about that?
Yeah, we're going to be discussing housing policy and movement of housing policy in America, talking about what policies are going into effect, what are some parent leaders doing in the area of housing. So it's going to be a great conversation. We're going to invite a couple of parent leaders from our great work into the conversation. So it should be great. Hopefully we will see you all there.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, we are planning on having parent leaders, a couple of parent leaders who are going to join us on the podcast and speak to some of the work that they're doing in the area of housing and moving policy around housing.
Well, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much, Hobson. I really appreciate you just like talking about what's been happening. I look forward to like how you give deeper context to what all of this means for us and how it all works. And by it all, we're talking about policy and politics in this country, civics. So just excited to have your great expertise in this space. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And I look forward to working with you and Movet and the great parent leaders over the next few months. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Bye, y'all.